Like you to turn with me to Luke chapter 1 verses 5 and we'll read through 25. Luke chapter 1 verses 5 through 25. I'd like when you read with me to think particularly in mind of who you identify with most in the story. It's always instructive to see who you most identify with and to see if you have some life experience that kind of helps you get into that role. There may be things that you've experienced that help you be, what would you say, compassionate with the character that's there. And that will make this surely more meaningful and helpful to us. I'm going to be looking this morning at the Christian life, that it's more like falling in love. It's more like a wonderful relationship than just adherence to a rule book. This time of Advent helps us reflect on Christ's coming, and it stresses the value, the benefit of taking time to reflect, to be silent, to be quiet, to seek solitude, so that we can actually engage in God's presence. Advent can lead us to times of communion with God. That's more like, well, you mentioned it, Rebecca, a sharing between friends, that kind of a relationship. It's more described by that. So this morning's theme is about a growing intimacy with God, an intimacy with God and longing for a deeper, more vital relationship with God. In Luke chapter 1, it begins this way. In the time of Herod, king of Judea, there was a priest named Zechariah who belonged to the priestly division of Abia. His wife Elizabeth was also a descendant of Aaron. Both of them were upright in the sight of God, observing all the Lord's commandments and regulations blamelessly. But they had no children, because Elizabeth was barren, and they both were well along in years. Now once when Zechariah's division was on duty and he was serving as priest before God, he was chosen by lot according to the custom of the priesthood to go into the temple of the Lord and burn incense. And when the time for the burning of incense came, all the assembled worshipers were praying outside. Then the angel of the Lord appeared to him standing at the right side of the altar of incense. When Zechariah saw him, he was startled and gripped with fear. But the angel said, "Do not be afraid, Zechariah. Your prayer has been heard. Your wife Elizabeth will bear you a son, and you are to give him the name John. He will be a joy and delight to you, and many will rejoice because of his birth, for he will be great in the sight of the Lord. He's never to take wine or other fermented drink, and he will be filled with the Holy Spirit even from birth. Many of the people in Israel will he bring back to the Lord their God, and he will go on before the Lord in the spirit and power of Elijah, to turn the hearts of the fathers to their children and the disobedient to the wisdom of the righteous, to make ready a people prepared for the Lord." Zechariah asked the angel, "How can I be sure of this? I am an old man, and my wife is well along in years." The angel answered, "I am Gabriel. I stand in the presence of God, and I have been sent to speak to you and tell you this good news. And now you will be silent and not able to speak until the day this happens, because you did not believe my words, which will come true at their proper time." Meanwhile, the people were waiting for Zechariah and wondering why he'd stayed out so long in the temple. And when he came out, he could not speak to them. They realized he'd seen a vision in the temple, for he kept making signs to them, but remained unable to speak. When his time of service was completed, he returned home. After this, his wife Elizabeth became pregnant and for 5 months remained in seclusion. "The Lord has done this for me," she said. "In these days he has shown his favor and taken away my disgrace." This was the beginning of the story. And this morning, we're going to take more a look at Elizabeth's life. We looked at Zechariah primarily last year. We're going to take a look at Elizabeth's life. But just for fun, who did you identify most with in the story? Zechariah? Okay. I know the guys have a hard time identifying with Elizabeth. Sometimes it's difficult. I asked this in youth group, and some said that they found it impossible. But maybe there's a way that we can draw just a step closer to that. It's very interesting how young we began to think about actually being a parent. Sometime you'll see this little one, tiny one, dragging around a doll underneath his or her arm. It begins sometimes very, very young. The idea of feeding. I can remember when my youngest sibling was born. And there was all this, I remember the excitement and the hubbub that was going on about this new birth that was going to happen. Things start being built into you very, very early about the excitement of having a baby. It goes on in later years. I know there were certainly some years that I knew I was not prepared to be a parent. I had no business being a parent because I didn't have a clue. But I always thought about maybe that day when I would be a parent. There's also the times where I anticipated being a parent. We knew we were going to have a baby. Now, again, I have to come at this from a guy's standpoint. This is the only way I can access maybe what it was kind of like to begin to be Elizabeth. I imagine that Elizabeth and Zechariah both had moments where they thought and they pondered. There were those years of waiting. Probably for Elizabeth, there were those monthly cycles that went by time and again and time and again. And she'd lived with this great hope, this great dream. Every Jewish mother dreamed, hoped that they would have a baby, especially the daughter of a priest and the wife of a priest. There was always this hope promised through the prophets. Messiah would someday come. And who knew? Who knew? It might be you. Here's the hope that had to have been part of her life. There had to be those moments where it felt like life was getting away from both of them. Difficult. Passing that time. It looks, by the way the passage reads, that Elizabeth probably had gone into menopause. And this was amazing. I don't know what was going on in Zechariah's mind at the time that he was praying. He certainly was praying for the for the people as a priest. But the angel notes that his prayer has been answered. Probably was a prayer that had been prayed throughout the years. And by the way, and he hardly expected it to be answered. That anticipation, that hopefulness, the thoughts that are in your heart, I can remember as a dad-to-be, I can remember pulling up to the house and sitting in the car, sitting there wondering what kind of baby we would have, whether or not it was ready, capable of parenting, sometimes wondering what in the world I was thinking, that I took on these responsibilities. I wondered, will I be capable, able? Dreaming about what kind of child this would be. There are little hints in the text that I think caught the heart of Zacharias and probably also Elizabeth. By what we read about later in the text, there's an indication that everything that Zachariah heard from the angel, he must have shared, perhaps in a written way, with Elizabeth. And when he penned those words, "He will be a joy and a delight to you," that must have resonated with their hearts. This great, great promise. Imagine all the years of wondering, of hoping against hope, eventually thinking, well, that's probably past. And then the promise. Elizabeth realizing that in her body something new was happening. Something was stirring. I imagine she had some moments, maybe like I did in the car. Or I can remember kind of setting up the little nursery for the first time and sitting down in that nursery by myself, Janet off in the other part of the house, and again having those same thoughts, wondering what will this child be like, and how do I need to be as a father to truly parent this child well, anticipating what kind of child this will be, hoping, and then I can look and think of Elizabeth sitting down quietly, reflecting on the words of the angel, hearing that his name would be John, which means gift from God, and thinking, oh, that's just right. It's an amazing story. As we read later on, the story continues with the baby being born. 8 days later becomes the naming, the circumcision and the naming. It all happened at the same time. Well, what are you going to name him? Zacharias can't talk. She says, his name is John. Whoa, 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 just a minute. It creates a flap. Everybody knows, you know, there's nobody, none of your ancestors named John. You always, if you do it right, you always name him after somebody that was in your family lineage. It's interesting how strong those things are, how powerful they are. I traced my family history from the time that my mother's side came over on a sailing boat to South Carolina, and from there on into the present generations, there was always either a David or a David Alexander or an Alexander or a David. throughout those generations. Very strong sort of thing. So there's this objection, this great objection to naming. No, she says, his name is John. I think that was cemented deep in her heart. Gift from God. Gift from God. Can you imagine what she must have been feeling? How loved she must have been feeling. This week, just for fun, for youth group, I looked up the number of songs that have the phrase or title, Love Came Down. This would be a good study. You can just, there are a great number of songs. Three very popular contemporary songs, Love Came Down, but there are a lot, lots and lots of songs that just start off or have that, Love Came Down. I imagine that was one of Elizabeth's reflections. Love came down. Well, I'd like to read the next part, and we'll reflect a little bit more on that. When it was time for Elizabeth to have her baby, she gave birth to a son. Her neighbors and relatives heard what the Lord was that the heard that the Lord had shown her great mercy, and they shared in her joy. On the eighth day, they came to circumcise the child, and they were going to name him after his father Zechariah. But the mother spoke up and said, "No, he's to be called John." They said to her, "There is no one among your relatives that has that name." Then they made signs to his father to find out what he would like to have name the child. He asked for a writing tablet, and to everyone's astonishment, he wrote, "His name is John." And immediately his mouth was opened, and his tongue was loosed, and he began to speak, praising God. I found it was interesting here. The neighbors were all filled with awe, and throughout the hill country of Judea, people were talking about these things. That's basically gossip, isn't it? Gossip can be two things. It can be positive and it can also be negative, right? So, gossip. I've been told that the word gossip and godparent have a similar origin. And you can see why. Because godparents are going to be gossiping about their precocious goddaughter or son. But it's in everybody's thoughts. It's in everybody's minds. They're filled with awe. And throughout the hill country of Judea, people were talking about all these things. Everyone who heard this wondered about it, asking, "What then is this child going to be?" For the Lord's hand was with him. So telling wonderful verse back in verse 24. "The Lord has done this for me," she said. "In these days he has shown his favor and taken away my disgrace among the people." We had a kind of an interesting version of this after people found out that she was going to have the baby. And I had asked the youth group to try to think about what it might have been like for Elizabeth. Ben popped up with a really fun take on this. Do you want to give us our take? It would have been such a swap. You can see there's the word disgrace to begin with, and then there's nothing but joy, just joy. Love came down and touched a couple. Love came down and changed their lives. Love came down to a group, to a couple who, if ever they had the right, if anyone had the right, they would have had the right to think, we've done everything that he asked. We have lived a righteous life. We've given ourselves to his decrees and his laws. We have obeyed him all our lives. What gives? What's the benefit? What's the benefit of serving? If this is how it goes, if this is how it turns, and yet they quietly live their lives out on into their old age in faith and trust and hope, and love came down one day and changed their lives. I think they teach us some things. What do you think they teach us? What does this teach us about? Let's just consider first the question, what does this story teach us about God? In him all things are possible. Things happen in his timing. And they don't happen the way you think they will. Gracious beyond measure. What do you see in this story about how we should live? To live thankfully. In faith? Okay. Open to miracles. You know, sometimes we get pretty settled in our religious life. So settled in, we might not anticipate or even expect that God could address some of the unmet hopes and dreams of our lives. I think that's important, to remain open. Open to what God might do. Some of God's surprises. Not like the story I heard about a man who on Christmas knocked on a door and the lady opened the door. Obviously, the man was there hoping to find some kind of work to buy some Christmas presents for his family. She said, well, can you paint? He says, I consider myself a pretty good painter. So she said, there are two cans of green paint out on the porch, back porch. You paint those, you do a good job, then we'll arrange on a fair price. So he went around the house and was gone for a few hours, came back with green obviously on him, and she said, well, did you get it done? And he said, yes, I did get it done, but that's not a Porsche, that's a Mercedes. Yeah, I'm just teasing. Surprises, Christmas surprises. God could surprise you in a wonderful way. Think about it. There have been things that you've hoped for. That's what last Sunday was about. Hope. Jesus brings us hope. And it is this, I think it's this love relationship with God that keeps hope bright. When you nurture it, instead of taking that curmudgeon attitude, I gave you my best, I did everything that you asked me to do, and this is it, this is what I get. Instead of taking that, to lean into that relationship, deepen that relationship with him. Let love truly come down. Expect new things. hopeful things. Some of the things that we can do are to lean toward trust, to be hopeful, to live our faith, to think, I think, a word to all of us, especially those of us who are growing older. I started receiving those AARP things, you know, a few years ago. For those of us, you know, God is not finished with you. He showed that to Elizabeth and to Zechariah. God is not finished with you. Some of the greatest things could be yet to come. I'd like to invite our worship team to come forward and let's prepare our hearts and pray together as they do. Thank you for these wonderful examples that can instruct our walk with you, Lord. They teach us to hope more in you. Thank you for your great love that we are not lost in all the things that are going on in this world. We're not lost to you, nor are the dreams of our hearts. Bless you. May you be praised because your love reached down to us first in Jesus. And you've graced us with the bliss of sins forgiven and of new life, new beginnings in you. We give you praise for that. Teach us more how to love you back. Help us become aware in this season of your bid for our hearts and our minds. We ask this in your name. Amen.